From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
El general de ejército Raúl Castro Ruz,
Army General Raúl Castro Ruz, President of State and the Council of Ministers, will make an important announcement to the Cuban people and to the international public this Wednesday, the 17th of December at midday, regarding relations with the United States. At 12 o'clock, the president's statement will be broadcast on Cuban national radio and television.
That was the sound of Cuban television Wednesday morning, with the first hint that something big was about to break regarding relations between that island nation and the U.S. At the appointed time, Cuba's president spoke to the nation and the world.
We are united in these 56 years of revolution. We have been loyal, defending all the principles of our independence war. Now, even though all the difficulties and the appliance of our economic model, the result of a dialogue of the higher level that included a conversation that I held yesterday with President Barack Obama, we could advance in the resolution of some things of interest for both countries. As Fidel promised, in July 2001, when he said they will come back. Today arrived Gerardo, Ramon, and Antonio. The big happiness of the families and all the people that mobilized with this objective is extended among the hundreds of committees and solidarity groups, governments, parliaments, and organizations, institutions, and also personalities that all along these 17 years have claimed and through effort for this liberation. To all of them, I express my gratitude and compromise. This decision of President Barack Obama should be respected and also should be recognized by our people. We want to thank the support of the Vatican, especially of Pope Francis, to enhance the relationships between Cuba, the relation between Cuba and the United States, also to the Canadian government for giving all the support to concrete this high-level dialogue among the two countries. Also, we decided to release and send to the U.S. a Cuban spy that was working for this nation. On the other hand, based on humanitarian reasons, today we also released the citizen, the American citizen, Alan Gross.
De manera unilateral,
this in a unilateral way,
y en estricto apego a nuestro ordenamiento,
also respecting all our laws, they have received judicial benefits, the imprisoned people, including the release of people, only the ones that the United States have shown interest in.
Igualmente, hemos acordado.
Also, we agreed to reestablish the diplomatic relations.
Esto no quiere decir
this doesn't mean
se haya resuelto.
That everything is solved. The economic blockade, commercial and financial blockade that is provoking high damages, human and economic, in our country should stop. Even though the measures have been turned into law, the U.S. president can modify the application and using his executive faculties. We propose to the U.S. government to adopt measures, joint measures, to enhance the bilateral relation and advance to the normalization of the links between our countries based on the principles of international rights and the UN dictations, which disposition to maintain the cooperation among multilateral organisms as the UN. To recognize that we have profound differences, mainly in sovereignty, national sovereignty, democracy, human rights, and also foreign policy, I now say again our will to dialogue on these topics. I ask the U.S. government to remove the obstacles that restricts the vincles, the links between our two peoples, our families, and our citizens, mainly those that are willing to travel the mail, direct mail, and telecommunications. The progress that we have reached so far show that it is possible to have a solution for many of our problems. As we have said, we must learn the art of living with our differences in a civilized way.
Meanwhile, his U.S. counterpart, an unusually ebullient President Barack Obama, explained to the people of his nation and the world about the decision to seek changes in relations between the two neighboring countries.
Today, the United States of America is changing its relationship with the people of Cuba. In the most significant changes in our policy in more than 50 years, we will end an outdated approach that for decades has failed to advance our interests, and instead, we will begin to normalize relations between our two countries. Through these changes, we intend to create more opportunities for the American and Cuban people and begin a new chapter among the nations of the Americas. There's a complicated history between the United States and Cuba. I was born in 1961, just over 2 years after Fidel Castro took power in Cuba, and just a few months after the Bay of Pigs invasion, which tried to overthrow his regime. Over the next several decades, the relationship between our countries played out against the backdrop of the Cold War and America's steadfast opposition to communism. We're separated by just over 90 miles, but year after year, an ideological and economic barrier hardened between our two countries. Meanwhile, the Cuban exile community in the United States made enormous contributions to our country in politics, in business, culture, and sports. Like immigrants before, Cubans helped remake America, even as they felt a painful yearning for the land and families they left behind. All of this bound America and Cuba in a unique relationship. at once family and foe. Proudly, the United States has supported democracy and human rights in Cuba through these 5 decades. We've done so primarily through policies that aim to isolate the island, preventing the most basic travel and commerce that Americans can enjoy anyplace else. And though this policy has been rooted in the best of intentions, no other nation joins us in imposing these sanctions, and it has had little effect beyond providing the Cuban government with a rationale for restrictions on its people. Today, Cuba is still governed by the Castros and the Communist Party that came to power half a century ago. Neither the American nor Cuban people are well served by a rigid policy that's rooted in events that took place before most of us were born. Consider that for more than 35 years, we've had relations with China, a far larger country also governed by a Communist Party. Nearly 2 decades ago, we reestablished relations with Vietnam, where we fought a war that claimed more Americans than any Cold War confrontation. That's why, when I came into office, I promised to re-examine our Cuba policy. As a start, we lifted restrictions for Cuban Americans to travel and send remittances to their families in Cuba. These changes, once controversial, now seem obvious. Cuban Americans have been reunited with their families and are the best possible ambassadors for our values. And through these exchanges, a younger generation of Cuban Americans has increasingly questioned an approach that does more to keep Cuba closed off from an interconnected world. While I've been prepared to take additional steps for some time, a major obstacle stood in our way: the wrongful imprisonment in Cuba of a U.S. citizen and USAID subcontractor, Alan Gross, for 5 years. Over many months, my administration has held discussions with the Cuban government about Alan's case and other aspects of our relationship. His Holiness Pope Francis issued a personal appeal to me and to Cuba's President Raul Castro, urging us to resolve Alan's case and to address Cuba's interest in the release of 3 Cuban agents who've been jailed in the United States for over 15 years. Today, Alan returned home, reunited with his family at long last. Alan was released by the Cuban government on humanitarian grounds. Separately, in exchange for the 3 Cuban agents, Cuba today released one of the most important intelligence agents that the United States has ever had in Cuba, and who has been imprisoned for nearly 2 decades. This man, whose sacrifice has been known to only a few, provided America with the information that allowed us to arrest the network of Cuban agents that included the men transferred to Cuba today, as well as other spies in the United States. This man is now safely on our shores. Having recovered these 2 men who sacrificed for our country, I'm now taking steps to place the interests of the people of both countries at the heart of our policy. First, I've instructed Secretary Kerry to immediately begin discussions with Cuba to reestablish diplomatic relations that have been severed since January of 1961. Going forward, the United States will reestablish an embassy in Havana, and high-ranking officials will visit Cuba. Where we can advance shared interests, we will, on issues like health, migration, counterterrorism, drug trafficking, and disaster response. Indeed, we've seen the benefits of cooperation between our countries before. It was a Cuban, Carlos Finlay, who discovered that mosquitoes carry yellow fever. His work helped Walter Reed fight it. Cuba has sent hundreds of healthcare workers to Africa to fight Ebola. And I believe American and Cuban healthcare workers should work side by side to stop the spread of this deadly disease. Now, where we disagree, we will raise those differences directly, as we will continue to do on issues related to democracy and human rights in Cuba. But I believe that we can do more to support the Cuban people and promote our values through engagement. After all, these 50 years have shown that isolation has not worked. It's time for a new approach. Second, I've instructed Secretary Kerry to review Cuba's designation as a state sponsor of terrorism. This review will be guided by the facts and the law. Terrorism has changed in the last several decades. At a time when we are focused on threats from Al-Qaeda to ISIL, a nation that meets our conditions and renounces the use of terrorism should not face this sanction. Third, we are taking steps to increase travel, commerce, and the flow of information to and from Cuba. This is fundamentally about freedom and openness, and also expresses my belief in the power of people-to-people engagement. With the changes I'm announcing today, it will be easier for Americans to travel to Cuba, and Americans will be able to use American credit and debit cards on the island. Nobody represents America's values better than the American people, and I believe this contact will ultimately do more to empower the Cuban people. I also believe that more resources should be able to reach the Cuban people. So we're significantly increasing the amount of money that can be sent to Cuba and removing limits on remittances that support humanitarian projects, the Cuban people, and the emerging Cuban private sector. I believe that American businesses should not be put at a disadvantage, and that increased commerce is good for Americans and for Cubans. So we will facilitate authorized transactions between the United States and Cuba. U.S. financial institutions will be allowed to open accounts at Cuban financial institutions, and it will be easier for U.S. exporters to sell goods in Cuba. I believe in the free flow of information. Unfortunately, our sanctions on Cuba have denied Cubans access to technology that has empowered individuals around the globe. So I've authorized increased telecommunications connections between the United States and Cuba. Businesses will be able to sell goods that enable Cubans to communicate with the United States and other countries. These are the steps that I can take as president to change this policy. The embargo that's been imposed for decades is now codified in legislation. As these changes unfold, I look forward to engaging Congress in an honest and serious debate about lifting the embargo. Yesterday, I spoke with Raul Castro to finalize Alan Gross's release and the exchange of prisoners, and to describe how we will move forward. I made clear my strong belief that Cuban society is constrained by restrictions on its citizens. In addition to the return of Alan Gross and the release of our intelligence agent, we welcome Cuba's decision to release a substantial number of prisoners whose cases were directly raised with the Cuban government by my team. We welcome Cuba's decision to provide more access to the internet for its citizens and to continue increasing engagement with international institutions like the United Nations and the International Committee of the Red Cross that promote universal values. But I'm under no illusion about the continued barriers to freedom that remain for ordinary Cubans. The United States believes that no Cuban should face harassment or arrest or beatings simply because they're exercising a universal right to have their voices heard. And we will continue to support civil society there. While Cuba has made reforms to gradually open up its economy, we continue to believe that Cuban workers should be free to form unions, just as their citizens should be free to participate in the political process. Moreover, given Cuba's history, I expect it will continue to pursue foreign policies that will at times be sharply at odds with American interests. I do not expect the changes I'm announcing today to bring about a transformation of Cuban society overnight, but I am convinced that through a policy of engagement, we can more effectively stand up for our values and help the Cuban people help themselves as they move into the 21st century. To those who oppose the steps I'm announcing today, let me say that I respect your passion and share your commitment to liberty and democracy. The question is how we uphold that commitment. I do not believe we can keep doing the same thing for over five decades and expect a different result. Moreover, it does not serve America's interests or the Cuban people to try to push Cuba towards collapse. Even if that worked, and it hasn't for 50 years, we know from hard-earned experience that countries are more likely to enjoy lasting transformation if their people are not subjected to chaos. We are calling on Cuba to unleash the potential of 11 million Cubans by ending unnecessary restrictions on their political, social, and economic activities. In that spirit, we should not allow U.S. sanctions to add to the burden of Cuban citizens that we seek to help. To the Cuban people, America extends a hand of friendship. Some of you have looked to us as a source of hope, and we will continue to shine a light of freedom. Others have seen us as a former colonizer intent on controlling your future. Jose Marti once said, "Liberty is the right of every man to be honest." Today, I'm being honest with you. We can never erase the history between us, but we believe that you should be empowered to live with dignity and self-determination. Cubans have a saying about daily life: no es fácil. It's not easy. Today, the United States wants to be a partner in making the lives of ordinary Cubans a little bit easier, more free, more prosperous. To those who have supported these measures, I thank you for being partners in our efforts. In particular, I want to thank His Holiness Pope Francis, whose moral example shows us the importance of pursuing the world as it should be, rather than simply settling for the world as it is. The Government of Canada, which hosted our discussions with the Cuban government, and a bipartisan group of congressmen who've worked tirelessly for Alan Gross's release and for a new approach to advancing our interests and values in Cuba. Finally, our shift in policy towards Cuba comes at a moment of renewed leadership in the Americas. This April, we are prepared to have Cuba join the other nations of the hemisphere at the Summit of the Americas. But we will insist that civil society join us, so that citizens, not just leaders, are shaping our future. And I call on all my fellow leaders to give meaning to the commitment to democracy and human rights at the heart of the Inter-American Charter. Let us leave behind the legacy of both colonization and communism, the tyranny of drug cartels, dictators, and sham elections. A future of greater peace, security, and democratic development is possible if we work together. Not to maintain power, not to secure vested interests, but instead to advance the dreams of our citizens. My fellow Americans, the city of Miami is only 200 miles or so from Havana. Countless thousands of Cubans have come to Miami on planes and makeshift rafts, some with little but the shirt on their back and hope in their hearts. Today, Miami is often referred to as the capital of Latin America, but it is also a profoundly American city, a place that reminds us that ideals matter more than the color of our skin or the circumstances of our birth, a demonstration of what the Cuban people can achieve, and the openness of the United States to our family to the south. Todos somos Americanos. Change is hard in our own lives and in the lives of nations. And change is even harder when we carry the heavy weight of history on our shoulders. But today we are making these changes because it is the right thing to do. Today America chooses to cut loose the shackles of the past so as to reach for a better future for the Cuban people, for the American people, for our entire hemisphere, and for the world.
Sally O'Brien is a progressive journalist and media activist, and has been a news producer at Pacifica station WBAI since 1980. She hosts the long-running program Cuba in Focus for Pacifica. We spoke with her after the two presidents had made their announcements Wednesday. So, Sally, you've been covering Cuba for years. How are you feeling today?
Well, I mean, I'm very emotional, very amazed that this was going to happen. I woke up this morning and saw the New York Times, and I said, huh? Let me start calling people. This just doesn't seem right. I didn't have any hint that this was going on, you know, and it is an amazing historical moment, really amazing. President Obama, you know, rightfully said today the USA is embarking on a new era of relations with Cuba. And, you know, quoting Obama again, most Americans are bound to a policy that's rooted in events initiated before we were born. And, well, of course, that doesn't apply to me, but
yeah, right.
but it's certainly a true statement, and it is absolutely true that the nationwide polls on every account have shown that within the Cuban-American community, as well as the U.S. community at large, the majority of people want an end to this Cold War policy, and it seems today has been a very huge first, second, third, and fourth step, and now the Congress needs to act.
What about the families of the five? How do you think they're feeling today?
I couldn't imagine how they're feeling, especially I think about Adriana, who hasn't been able to see her husband since he was arrested. for all these years, and they had been talking about having a family and having children. Really, in the months just before that arrest, he was trying to bring her to Miami to live with him, and then the arrest, and the U.S. government never gave her, Adriana Perez, a visa to come and see her husband. So I can't, I couldn't begin to imagine how wonderful they feel. And you know, in May, Don, I interviewed Rene Gonzalez and Fernando Gonzalez and their wives, Rosa Aurora, Fernando's wife, and Olga Salanueva, Rene's wife. And it was really, really amazing that the men had, of course, a lot to say, and they were very happy to be out. And the two women were so sad. You know, they were excited that their husbands were home, but they, Olga said, I couldn't imagine that it would just be the two of them. And then Rosa talked about, she talked about Adriana and Adriana wanting to have children, and now it's past that point, and that it was so sad. So there were tears with elation, and I think today there'll just be elation.
And they, of course, are a symbol for what's happened to the Cuban people over the last 50 years, with the U.S. trying at every turn to isolate that country from the rest of the world.
Absolutely. And I think that it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because we have to remember that there's still a U.S. blockade of the island. There's still a travel ban. There are financial restrictions. You cannot spend money in Cuba. You cannot do business with Cuba. And the Terracelli law, as well as the Helms-Burton law, absolutely forbid that and do extraterritorial sanctions on countries that do business with Cuba. So the fight isn't over yet, but what an incredible day along the way.
Meanwhile, while President Obama lectures the Cuban people about democracy, here in the U.S., a 66-year-old activist entered prison looking at 10 years for circulating a petition to recall the mayor of a company town called Benton Harbor, Michigan. Black Agenda Radio's Glenn Ford has more.
In sentencing Reverend Edward Pinckney to between 2.5 and 10 years in prison, the state of Michigan has shown that the old Jim Crow and the new Jim Crow are the same damn thing. An all-white jury presided over by a white judge under the malevolent guidance of a white prosecutor based on evidence gathered by a white sheriff found the Benton Harbor, Michigan activist guilty of 5 elections-related felonies. It was the same white power structure that, back in 2007, convinced another all-white jury to convict Reverend Pinckney of 5 counts of alleged elections fraud, resulting in 5 years probation. A year later, when Pinckney, in a newspaper interview, quoted the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy to the effect that those who had persecuted him would be judged by the hand of God, he was sent to prison, the first American known to have been incarcerated for quoting the Bible. This may seem like an old Jim Crow story about a preacher from a small, mostly black town who wanted only to help his people through the voting process, but is set upon by backward whites determined to maintain their monopoly on political power. And it is true, old man Jim Crow is alive and well on the banks of Lake Michigan. But it is the new Jim Crow, the mass black incarceration state, that has snatched 66-year-old Reverend Pinckney away to what could become life in prison. The judge and prosecutor said that Pinckney's 12 past and present felony convictions make him a career criminal, even though each count stems from an elections process. The old Jim Crow would have unapologetically sent Pinckney to the chain gang for being an uppity black man, but the new Jim Crow simply piled on a bunch of felonies to put him away as a serial criminal, allowing the system to claim that race had nothing to do with it. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.